All right. We are very, very happy about the subject of today's call. It's one that we remind ourselves of all the time, the principles that we're teaching today, and that we see a great need for in all the families that we love and that we know. And so it's something that can be worked on and developed. It's an ability, and there's some skills that go with it. And there's basically two things we're teaching, because the second one you can't do without the first one. And so let me go ahead and give an overview, and then we'll jump right into it. The first one that we're teaching is called emotional regulation. So it's learning how to know what we're feeling and how to regulate our feelings and our emotions. And sometimes, well, that's the first step. So the first one is personal emotional regulation. And the second thing we're teaching is called emotional coaching. So it's how to coach our children and teach them how to emotionally regulate, which is very different than just Anelody and I teaching you how to have emotional regulation. Actually, emotional coaching with children is different. You don't have to go it, it You don't have to go into all the stuff that we're going in to teach you how to emotionally regulate. But there's five very simple steps that, if they're followed, then we can raise our children in such a way that they know what they're feeling, and they can basically eliminate 90% of meltdowns and out of control behavior. And think about it, that's kind of really important in all of our homes and in all of our lives. So with that small overview, we're just going to dive right into it. And Elodie has a story to start us off with.
So, as far as emotional regulation in yourself goes, one of my favorite historical figures is Gandhi. And I'm thinking about the story of when he first started in on what we would call his mission phase. He had gone to college in England. He had already come to South Africa to start his practice. And while in South Africa, he felt very compelled to resist against the laws there that were suppressing the Indians. And he was had a lot of success there. And he was invited to go to India to start the same care. And while he was in India, he was of a higher class. Of course, the Indian class system is it's very strong, and it was really important that everybody stayed in their class. The class system is what regulated their society. And he and his wife were from the second class, or second class down. I guess they would call that the fourth class, the higher classes. And so they were used to a comfortable life with servants. Gandhi himself had a lot of money. And he decided that he wanted to create a community where everyone was the same. It's very interesting as you think about yourself and your situation in the United States. It's interesting how people become very anti-class, and they don't want poverty, and they don't want rich. And I think it's interesting to kind of evaluate the things over history, that they've had experiences like that also. And anyway, so he wanted to create an ashram where everyone was equal. So he brought many people from his own class into his ashram, and including his wife. And the the organization of the ashram required that everyone participate in doing all of the duties in the ashram, including cleaning the latrines. And Gandhi had this conversation with his wife about cleaning the latrines, and she absolutely refused to clean the latrines because she said that that is some duty that was left only for the untouchables, and she was never going to behave like an untouchable. And they came to loggerheads on this, and he grabbed her and began to shake her and realized that he was completely out of control. And it became a very emotional moment for him. He realized that his cause or the things he was doing what became more important to him than his relationship with his wife and his need to control his wife for his cause was far out of control. He stopped himself in the middle of this very heated argument where he was, you know, about to abuse his wife, and he left. He walked away, he sat himself down, and he began to walk himself through all the emotions he just experienced, and then backwards to the core of the real emotion, which was, I am so invested in this project that I'm doing. I'm so emotionally tied. It's so part of who I am. It defines me so much that I am willing to abuse the people around me so that I can accomplish that work. And he began a very, very heated and strong journey toward completely disattaching himself to his work, to his work and all the things he accomplished, so that he could put the people in his life first, his relationships first, his love for the people around him first, so that he could begin to could emotionally regulate himself in all situations, which really gave rise to the philosophy of Satyagraha. And you will, you know, if you read the books about Gandhi, you can see how emotionally under control he always was, and it was because he knew how to make people in his life first.
With that, he knew how to identify his emotions.
Right.
When they started out small, before he ever got out of control.
Right. He knew how to identify those emotions that could lead to him getting out of control, and he knew how to walk himself back to what was causing the emotion in the first place, and to change his perspective on those things. So today, we would like to walk you through a little bit of that for yourself. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you became angry with a three-year-old because they couldn't share, or because they were whining, or because they were demanding something of you? Have you ever found yourself being irritated by your husband or your spouse that you see for the first time during the day, and you're not exactly sure why you're irritated, but you're just irritated at something about them? Have you ever found yourself feeling that if your 12-year-old doesn't just sit down and read his book, you're going to smack him? Have you ever felt yourself sitting down with maybe a learning disabled child and getting more frustrated because they aren't following the program, or they can't get the program? Have you ever felt yourself maybe sitting down practicing with a child on an instrument and they are dinking around and you just can't, you know, you start getting angry or frustrated, or you have feelings that are emotions that are needing control them. I know all of you have experienced some intense emotions towards the people that you love that are negative, and that you want to be able to learn how to get under control so that you can have very positive interactions with the people that you love. I know you have.
We're going to.
And everyone I know has. So what we'd like to do today is give you the first level of how to first emotionally regulate yourself. But then, wouldn't it be so awesome, and wouldn't it have been so cool? And maybe you have had this experience where you've been able to have a parent teach you how to do it yourself as a child. Wouldn't it be so cool if you had had a parent who knew how to do it themselves and knew how to teach it to you? It's going to be one of the greatest skills that you have for your children, and we challenge you to practice and practice and practice this. Because it takes practice. Go ahead, Tiffany.
Okay. We're going to tell you a little bit about how our brains work. What happens is there's stimulus happening to us all day long. And those stimulus take place, and then we have two parts in our brain, and one of the parts of our brain is instinctive. And it just has this reaction that is instinctive. It's not by choice. It's simply because we actually have a brain. And then we have an emotion and a feeling that's instinctive that goes with whatever stimuli is going on continuously throughout the day. So a stimulus can happen and we have an instinctive reaction. Another stimulus can happen. We can have another stimulus reaction or instinctive reaction. And what happens is we have a choice after the stimulus happens, and our brain simply has an instinctive reaction. Then we move into a place where one of two things will happen to us. If we don't do something, if we haven't been taught to emotionally regulate, and if we just let the instinctive part take over and we go on automatic, then the emotion will drive us. And that's when we sometimes find ourselves trying to control the situation instead of controlling us. So we try and control the things around us, and we might feel anxious or panicky or frustrated or angry and feel like we need to control something, when in reality we can make a different choice. And that's, first of all, realize that the initial instinctive response is human. And that the back part of our brain is supposed to let off that chemical. And that's why we continue living, and that's why we can survive. It's right. And it's not something that we need to be ashamed of or feel guilty or bad about. But once we realize that it's happened, if we choose to do the first step, which is called noticing, which is to be introspective, the minute we choose to do this first step and to notice, I am feeling this. I am all of a sudden scared because my 2-year-old ran out the door and I've got to get to him before the car comes, you know, so you're running out the door or whatever. And as you're running, you're literally thinking, oh my gosh, my heart is pounding, I gotta get my child, you know. But the second you say, whoa, I am feeling this. And here's what's crazy, and I'm going to go home, and I really hope everyone will do this. There's a whole bunch of charts online, and Elodie and I already looked up a whole bunch. There's a whole bunch of charts of emotions, and we talk a lot in our scholar projects and in philosophy that we teach and the parenting and the principles that we teach. We talk a lot about language and how important language is, because language gives us thought. And we are very, it reminds me of the book 1984, where they tried to limit their language when they tried to describe things, and the book The Giver and the book Fahrenheit 451, where language was reduced to its simplest form. So you have good and you have bad, or you have angry and you have happy. You have beautiful and you have ugly. But that's it. You know, you don't have a lot more descriptive words when really, if we have a chart up on our wall with at least 50 and maybe even 100 descriptive emotions, like, let me give you some negative ones, distrustful, I feel suspicious, I feel scornful, I feel disdain, I feel bitter, I feel stupid, I feel worthless, I feel scared, I feel jealous, I feel paranoid, I feel resentful. You know, if you can say those things, or some of the positive ones, I feel determined, I feel forgiving, I feel hopeful, I feel motivated, I feel daring, I feel energetic, I feel excited, I feel happy, I feel caring, I feel confident, I feel strong, I feel grateful, I feel serene. So, if we can learn to have these words and more words part of our vocabulary so we can recognize the actual emotion we're feeling, and there's a secret here. Sometimes these emotions come in packages. Sometimes the emotions we feel are conflicting emotions. Holy cow, how can you feel opposite emotions? Or emotions that how can you feel eager and loving at the same time as a little bit suspicious? And is it possible? It's absolutely possible. And so if after we have that first instinctive reaction to a stimuli, we then ask ourselves and notice, I'm having a feeling. Here's what my heart's doing. Here's what my body's doing. Here's what I'm feeling. That alone gives us power to choose. If we don't take the moment to notice, then oftentimes what happens is we go on automatic and the emotion is driving us. If we take a moment to be introspective and notice, and we can choose, and it's true, we can choose to go right back to the automatic and let our emotions drive us, and we try and control the outside situation, okay? Just because we can choose doesn't mean we're going to choose the best. But once we choose, then we go into our next step. And that next step is to develop what's called a disciplined feeling. It's not the instinctual feeling. It's the disciplined feeling. We can move, I'm going to give you some words here of what can happen. We can move into empathy, logical sequencing, planning, following our plan, judgment, memory. So these are the places that we can go next. In other words, we can choose to look at what's happening and write our own script and tell ourselves the story we want to tell ourselves about what's happening. The same exact stimulus can happen to two people, and yet both of them can respond completely differently. And it all depends on the ability to frame to yourself what's happening. And we're going to give you some language to go with this when we talk about teaching the emotional regulation to the children. I was looking at some statistics on parenting, and honestly, Anelody woke up this morning. She's like, do you know what I realized in the night as I was contemplating what we're going to teach today? She's like, if our parents and if we can actually teach our children how to emotionally regulate, abuse will stop, you know, because this is the ability that if we can have it and if we use it and we develop the disciplined feeling, then abuse does stop, emotional abuse, verbal abuse. Physical abuse, because then instead of trying to control the objects around us and the people around us, we are learning how to have disciplined feeling and control ourselves. Anela, did you have any thoughts right now?
No, you're doing good.
Okay, all right.
Just keep going.
Okay, so here's the first step. The first step is to notice you. And we're going to teach you two big things. You're going to want to jump in and just notice your kids at first, and it's fine if you want to do that. But we really, really, really also, and especially because to do the second step well, you need to do this step well, is to notice you. So a few times today, after some stimulus happens to you, I mean, even right now, there's stimulus. Just right now, take a minute and think of 1 to 3 ways you're feeling. Some of you might be really receptive. Some of you might be excited that this information's coming. Some of you might be feeling grateful that your parents taught you this. Some of you might be feeling guilty and remembering all of the times you were out of control. Some of you might be feeling fearful of, oh my gosh, what if I don't get it right? Or I've ruined my kids. Some of you might be feeling really sad that maybe your spouse doesn't have the ability to know his feelings, or a child doesn't. You know, maybe that's, they actually have a disability in knowing what their feelings are, and it's going to take a whole lot more work to teach them than it's going to teach your other child. I mean, what is it you're feeling right now? I'm going to be quiet for 30 seconds. And I want you to try and breathe deep, be still, and be honest about the feeling that came instinctually to you, and write it down. Okay, I'm going to go over to the conference control, and I'd like to take a couple of shares, just maybe 30 seconds each, and just start with the beginning of tell us your beginning. I'll share mine first. I have two conflicting emotions when I just think about this right here. One of my feelings that comes is the feeling of this is going to be hard. That's one of mine. And I also have a positive feeling with me, which is I can do this. And I have some feelings of, I mean, all of my family members are popping through my brain, boom, 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 and I'm trying to figure out where they are on this scale. How many of my children can put a word to their emotion? You know, where are they at as far as knowing what they're feeling before it gets to a high level of intensity? So I'm sitting there, you know, and worry, that's it. It took me all that time to get to that one. One of my instinctual responses is worry. I don't know if any other mothers feel that. Okay. But at the same time, I have this knowledge, and I really do feel hopeful. So I feel a little bit of worry and a little bit of hopeful at the same time. So those are mine. So let's take a couple of shares. In order to share, you press 4-star, and then I'll come along and unmute you. I can see, you know, the 60 people who are on the call with us, and I'll be able to see if there's someone who wants to share for a second. There, right now, what they're feeling with what we've discussed so far. So tap into yourself, figure out what you're feeling, press. I know, what is it, 4-star or 5-star that they press?
5-star.
Okay, 5-star. Okay, here we go. We've got Raina. I'm going to unmute you. All right, Raina.
Okay, my first feeling was blessed, feeling blessed, and then grateful, and validated, and then guilty.
Okay, very good, very good. Blessed, grateful, very good descriptors. Validated, oh, so grateful, and guilty. Excellent, excellent. Thank you for sharing. All right, let's see if we can take one more share. So 5-star. Okay, here we go. Kim.
Is that for me?
Yep, that's you.
Okay. Enlightened. I feel enlightened because I have experienced this feeling of needing to control something and yet not controlling myself. So I feel enlightened and grateful about that, and sorrowful thinking about those experiences. I also feel very excited to teach myself and my children this, and my husband, because he's been having some hard mental things going on. So I just feel very hopeful.
Wow. Okay. Okay, awesome. Kim, thank you for sharing. Okay, so Kim, enlightened, grateful, sorrowful, excited, and hopeful. What beautiful descriptors. Okay, so we all did it just now. We took a minute, and let me share with you what you did. In the moment that you decided to notice what you were feeling, you moved from the back part of your brain into the front part of your brain. And you empowered yourself now to actually start choosing and thinking. It's crazy.
Now you have to remember, that as you have moved yourself into your frontal lobe, where you're able to actually make a choice now, that your mammalian brain, your instinctive part of your brain, is still so well trained that the chances of you not making the choice to move through the emotion and not have to control and calming yourself and being able to have healthy interactions with your family and children and friends, it's not a win yet, because this is something that has to be made a habit. You have to decide you're going to commit yourself to practicing this, because to go back to the instinctual, you have to understand it has already been created. That you might be getting frustrated because your husband doesn't know how to read you. That's a very you've got a synapse that's already created there. It's so easy for you to take that superhighway right back to that base emotion. So
your brain
you have
can
be
like 100 proofs.
Right. So this is an exercise that you are going to have to commit yourself to over the next few months to practice. Just start practicing.
Because then what happens is
new synapses.
Yes. As you reason, as you give yourself new language, as you decide to judge between what story you want to tell yourself, as you think about past things and let yourself go there and bring up the emotions that come with it, as you move into empathy, so planning, reasoning, judgment, memory, empathy, these logical sequencing, these are in the frontal lobe, they're in the front part of your brain, and they give you the power to choose what you want to feel. And right now, most likely, your emotion this morning isn't at a high intense level. You're catching it on a lower intensity. And so it's going to be easier to tame and to think about and for you to drive it rather than it control you.
Right.
Now,
and
if
you realize we just took you through an extra exercise that pulled you into the frontal lobe. So right now, your emotions are probably not bubbling to the surface. They're calm and serene and waiting for more information.
Okay, we're going to come back to once again how to emotionally regulate ourselves. But the step we've given you so far, first of all, we've given you knowledge to understand how your brain actually works in this little process in a very simplified way, how our brains work. Second, we've taught you the step of noticing what you're feeling, and let us all remember that we really, really should maybe put language up on the wall, maybe find a chart that matches our personalities and put it up on the wall so that we can have more descriptor words so that we're not just stuck on I feel bad or I feel angry. I mean, there's probably 20 words out there that can really pin what it is in the anger, you know, or the frustration or the happiness that we're actually feeling. Once we put words on it, then we can ask ourselves, why am I feeling this way? We can reason with ourselves. We can say, what experiences have I had that are making me feel sad right now about this particular stimulus? And we can take it backward. We can ask ourselves options. What can I do about it? Now that I know that I feel this way, what options do I have? What can I do about this? Or can I love and forgive even though I'm mad and want to hurt them? So it moves us into a place of options and of choosing and of making plans. Let's move over for a minute to the five steps of emotional coaching. The reason why we wanted to go to the first one is because we really need to know how to identify our emotions before we can teach our children how to identify theirs. And yet these five steps of teaching our children are so simple and so beautiful that I know that husband and wife can train themselves to do this with the kids. Here's the first one. I love this one so much. The first step of emotion coaching is noticing the emotions that our children are having before they are intense.
I want to share an experience that I had here. I have a son who has ADHD, and for those of you who understand that condition, you know that emotional regulation is the key to getting ADHD under control. And my son experiences some pretty high, intense emotions. And he experiences love emotions as strong as he experiences aggression and anger and frustration. So, you know, he feels the extremes from positive to negative in a really intense way. You know, the other day when I came in the house, he threw his arms around me, just hugged me really tight. I love you, mother. You know, he's just that the child that just feels those emotions really intense. Well, the other day, he was working on memorizing the Declaration of Independence, and he started feeling frustration to a very high degree. And when they start feeling those emotions so high, I'm going to tell you, these kids with ADHD, you experience your emotion at a normal level, okay? Times that by 100, and that's how they're experiencing emotion. So you have to understand that how you respond needs to be in a very validating way. I came into the house, I was sitting down, he started getting frustrated, really, really frustrated. When he gets frustrated, he starts pacing, he can't sit down. He's, you know, feeling this very strong emotion. And I said to him, of course, it's really easy. I noticed that you're feeling a little frustrated. Is that true? Immediately, he looks at me like, duh, yeah. But he realized as soon as I pointed out to him, he's like, yeah, I'm frustrated. Just noticing for them how they might be feeling is huge. It's a huge epiphany for them. And immediately he was able to begin to emotionally regulate. He's had enough coaching. But go ahead, Tiffany.
Okay, wonderful. That's a wonderful example. So you walk in, your son is at this level, and you help them bring it down by using these steps. Okay, so the first one, here's what I've noticed. I have a really good friend. Sometimes I'm in her house, and we have different gifts. She has the gift of lots of energy and lots of activity and a lot of physical strength, and she's, you know, cooking and cleaning and making crafts for the kids, and she's a really positive person and going around, and I love being in my friend's company. It's wonderful, and our kids get along really good. And I am really in tune to children, and I happen to know and see emotions when they're low intensities, and I don't have to wait until they're big intensities. So I've seen a pattern when I'm at my friend's house, and the pattern is that usually we can stay between 30 minutes and 1 hour, because within that amount of time, one of her children will have a complete meltdown, and then playtime's over. And I accept this, and I love this, my friend, so much that it's okay with me. And she's comfortable enough with me that when her children have the meltdowns, she's not so socially embarrassed that she can't have us be there. You know what I mean? She knows I love her and that it's okay. And there's lots of people she's not comfortable with because she knows her children have a lot of emotional breakdowns. And the thing is that for about 30 minutes before one of her children will have those emotional breakdowns, I notice when their emotions are not intense, and yet something is building. I'll give you a perfect example. The 7-year-old was playing a game, and the 3-year-old came up and took one of the pieces. And the 7-year-old told the 3-year-old to stop it, took the piece back, and was playing the game. And a couple minutes later, the 3-year-old went up, took another piece. That part of the game fell down. The 7-year-old said, "Now stop it." Took the piece back and started building. Literally, 30 seconds after he had it built, the 3-year-old came back, took another piece. The 7-year-old is building. He's like, "I told you to stop it." He picks up his sister, carries her to the other room, comes back, rebuilds, and he's got one hand out to guard her from coming. One hand is building. He's moving around the toy, and he's saying, "Stop it. I told you to stop it. I don't mess with my game. I told you to stop it." Now, within literally 15 minutes, he had gotten so upset that he took her and pushed her back. She fell into something, and now she's in a full-blown temper tantrum. He's on timeout because he pushed her, and he is so upset, and he's saying, "She's ruined my game. She ruined my game. She needs to go on timeout. She ruined my game." Okay? His emotions are completely now very high intense, and his sister's is way high intense, kicking and screaming and inconsolable. And she has the physical pain to go with it, and so it's really easy for her to be mad. And the whole time, the mom and I were both in and out of the room, and what my friend saw was the literal last explosion. She saw when the son is really angry and pushes his sister, and she hits her head, and now he's on timeout, and he can't play the rest of the day. That was literally the part that my friend noticed. All of the little teeny things she really didn't notice. And sometimes when I'm there, we can stay a little bit longer. If I go over and I do some emotional coaching, or sometimes what I do is simply take the little sister, I take the little sister, I get her another game, I get her doing something, and I avoid the issue, right? I help manage. I call it manage. And sometimes we have children we have to manage all the time. Sometimes there's friends that come over with our children that we know we have to be in the room managing, right? And because we're helping manage their emotions or whatever, helping them work through things. Okay, nobody gets to a high meltdown without something happening first. And usually it's without a few things happening first. And some of you might be thinking, no, my child just breaks down. My child goes from 0 to 100 in a second. And what I'm here to tell you that you might not want to hear is you should preview the prior 15 to 30 minutes because they will have given you an inkling. They will have had a lower intense emotion, a few of them. Very, very few people actually go from 0 to 100 instantly. There is usually, and this is general, Okay, this is your normal children, and this is even some of our possibly disabled children, but usually there are indicators and the lower intensity emotions first. And if we can notice them when they aren't intense, we don't have to have as many of the big meltdowns. So here's the next step. When we see the emotions, the second step is we see emotions in our children as a moment to teach versus the feeling of I failed, I'm bad, I'm embarrassed. I mean, let's say we have an emotion like that, like, oh my goodness, I one time was sitting in church, I mean, a very, very public place, and a child reached up and smacked his mother across the face. I can promise that the instinctive reaction to that was complete embarrassment and humiliation. And, oh my gosh, please tell me that half the people in my ward didn't just see my child smack me across my face. I mean, you know what I mean? Those are going to be very natural, instinctive responses to something like that. So even if we have a first reaction to something, we can choose then to move into the second step, which is to choose to see the emotion as a moment to teach. So we don't have to be afraid of it. We don't have to be afraid when our children are feeling something. If we can do that, we can move into step three, which Anelody showed us that she does just naturally, which is to validate and empathize. So we have a couple of pieces of language to give you that can help it be easier for you to validate and empathize. One of them is this sentence. It makes sense to me that you feel, and then you put in the descriptor word. It makes sense to me, or like Anelody said, you look like you might be frustrated. She's not saying it's okay to be frustrated. She's not saying I agree with you that you're frustrated. She's simply letting them know that she has recognized and respects.
And I'm not accusing him of being frustrated.
Nope.
Because
right.
As soon as we start accusing, we start making them wrong. And the other thing that we need to be very careful of is we have taught ourselves to numb ourselves to our own emotions. And when we see a child who is acting out or being angry, we begin to say, but they shouldn't be acting like that. You shouldn't feel that way. There's no reason.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to be feeling that way. Okay. It doesn't matter. They are feeling.
That's right. So there's not judgment here on whether it's good or bad that they feel this way. If we're not afraid of the emotion, then all emotions are fair game at this point.
That's right.
So,
we don't want to shame them because they're feeling that way. We don't want to make them wrong because they're feeling that way. Just recognize they are feeling. And, you know,
so,
we spend a lot of time making ourselves wrong because we're feeling in a certain way.
Yeah.
And we learned it from our parents, and we're going to teach it to theirs, I mean to our children.
That's right. So once we see these, we say a validating and empathizing statement, it makes sense to me that you feel this way, or I sense that you might be feeling this way. Then we help verbally label all of the emotions. Now, what that means is we can have a chart on the wall and we can say, which one of these do you think you might be feeling right now? Sometimes they cannot put words to it. Sometimes we have to actually help and say, do you think you might be feeling sad? No, okay. Do you think you might be feeling jealous? Okay.
So what are we doing to the brain at this point? What's happening to their brain? Their brain is going from that mammalian instinctive responses into the frontal lobe, and now we can begin to coach them.
That's right. Now we're able to problem solve and set limits of behavior. Once we have a word for what they're feeling or a few words for what they're feeling, I'm feeling embarrassed because she pushed me, and I'm feeling mad, and I'm feeling this. Then we say, oh, Okay. So
I understand that you're feeling that way, or that's very normal. As soon as they start seeing that you are okay with where they're at, that's very normal. That pulls them so fast in their frontal lobe, all of a sudden, they're able to make better choices.
And that's when we can teach what and set limits of proper behavior, because even if a child, say, is feeling one of the negative emotions, it's still not acceptable to throw something through the TV and break it. It might be that they feel angry, but there are appropriate ways to deal with these emotions and inappropriate ways to deal with these emotions. And so that's when we teach, well, we can color about it. We can come talk to mom about it. We can do some push-ups for a minute. We can go out of the room and calm down. We can ask for the talking flower and sit down and talk back and forth about what just happened, see if we can gain some more understanding. You know, there's like, and that's when we say, think with me, what's something you can do about this? What's not okay to do about this? Okay.
Well, I really like what Tiffany says, this language. It's really good language. She says, you and I both know that that would be an XYZ. That would be wrong for us, for you, or somebody else to hit. You and I both know that you don't want to hurt your sister. You and I both know that whatever. You and I both know that when you start saying that, they say, yeah, I do know that. I do know that, you know, I really don't want to hurt my sister and make her fall down. You and I both know that we don't want little Susie to be hurt by our actions. What can we do? What can we do differently? What could you do differently?
Okay, so these steps are simple. There's five of them, and, of course, they come after we notice our own feelings and move into the frontal lobe and make decisions and have choice. And if we can help our children, and the big one is the biggest key here is to notice our own, and then the biggest key for the children is to notice theirs. Try and learn to notice them before they became intense. Once they do become intense, again, we can move them into their frontal lobe and we can look at it as a teaching moment.
Tiffany, can you go over those five steps with us really quickly, just giving us very simple words to describe those five?
Yes, one, notice the emotions before they're intense. Two, we see the emotion as a moment to teach, versus if the fact that we failed or we're embarrassed or, you know, we move into, oh, I can teach, you know. Three, validate and empathize. It makes sense to me that you feel this way, or it's normal to feel that way, or I understand that you feel this way. Four, help verbally label the emotions. Find a list, make a chart, add language to your family culture. And five, problem solve and set limits of behavior. So it's not like they're not allowed to feel what they're feeling, but the behavior, you can definitely set up boundaries on what is appropriate behavior and what's not appropriate.
Okay, let me review these with you. So first of all, I notice before it explodes. Second,
that's ideal.
I recognize it as a moment to teach. Third, I verbalize.
You validate.
Tell them
and
tell them I notice and validate and empathize.
Yeah.
And fourth,
you help verbally label it.
I help them label it.
Yep.
And fifth, we problem solve together.
That's right.
Okay. So is there, I mean, it would be so awesome if I had just words that I could just kind of memorize. What? Can you give me some ideas of maybe a script or something that I can use to?
Yeah. Here's some really good words. I noticed, that's a really good one. Or you can even say, is this true for the noticing one? Those are two really good words. I noticed,
That would be like at level three. And that would be at this step number three when I start verbalizing.
Exactly, when you start validating and empathizing. Two more is I understand, or it's normal, or it makes sense to me that you feel this way. So there's three right there. I understand, or it's normal.
I notice, I understand, or it's normal.
Or it makes sense to me that you feel this way. That's a really good one, because that doesn't mean you're agreeing, but it means you respect them. And then teaching them, is this true? Do you think you might be feeling frustrated right now? Or it depends on the age here. You can make a really simple chart for the 2- and 3-year-olds. And the 4-year-olds, once they get a little older, you can have more words on the chart that they can choose from, or that you have in your family that you use. And then,
but maybe a 2- and 3-year-old, all I would say is, are you feeling angry?
Yeah, keep it a little more simple.
Could I have a conversation like that with a 2- or 3-year-old?
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
It depends. Did you get them after they're crying? Or like the 3-year-old who kept wanting to go play with her brother. You can say, I see that you want to play. I see that you're excited to play. I see that you're really focused.
Okay.
And even she was having emotions. I can see that it makes you upset when he turns you away. You know? And then you go say, should we get a game for you? I mean, there's just ways. The words for the last one, the language, is what can you do instead? You know, what can you do instead of, you know, this over here or the brother? What can you do instead? You know, he was doing everything in his power to protect his stuff, you know, without getting guilt intervention.
So I'm thinking that this technique that we're talking about, emotional coaching, what it does is it makes it so that we are not solving problems for our children, but we are empowering them to solve problems themselves. Because I'm thinking that sometimes we don't think they have the cognitive ability to actually do that. And so we underestimate their ability, and then we take care of it for them. And I would say that coaching does take time and patience. But as parents, we have to understand we're not trying. Our goal as parents is not to solve the problems. Our goal as parents is to teach and mentor.
Yeah. In fact, on a final note here, I'll read to you what Dr. Jehu Allred says about that. He says, don't do for the child or youth what he can do for himself. A dependent child is a demanding child. Most adults underestimate the abilities of children. Give children opportunities and encouragement to become contributing members of the family and other groups. Children tend to become irresponsible when we fail to give them opportunities to take on responsibility. In doing for the child, we deprive him of the opportunity to learn. Don't give undue service, which not only takes away from your child's independence, but it also takes away from your independence as you become a slave to a demanding child.
Gosh, it just reminds me of when my oldest son, now married and going into the Air Force, when he was young, I had a friend who was staying with us for a little while, and my son was the whiner extraordinaire, and she said to me, please, stop him from whining. And I realized I hadn't noticed that he was whining. I'm in my own head. And I keep thinking to myself, wow, if I had taught him how to emotionally regulate then, he could have avoided some of the great catastrophes that he's had in his life. You know, I'm not going to blame myself, and I'm not going to look back and say, oh, what a terrible mother I was. But I'm so grateful that our young parents today have this information, have this ability, have this tool to help them become better parent mentors.
Yes, and thank you, Anelody. Thank you so much for teaching with me today, and thank you everyone who came on the call. And we love and appreciate you so much. We can't even tell you how much we love associating with you and how important you are to us and how important the success and happiness of your families are to us and how we're all in this together and working towards these things. So we appreciate everything. And Elodie and I are going to go.
Tiffany and I are actually at a retreat training our trainers right now in St. George, and we have to start our retreat in about 2 minutes, Tiff. So I'm gonna go ahead and let you wrap things up because I'm going to get over there, okay?
Okay, all right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, Melody. And thank you, everyone. I'm looking here. Yeah, okay, so we're good. Well, everyone take care and have a great week. Feel free to contact us if you have any questions at office@gmail.com. Bye-bye.